Sisters on the track. Big ups to all my American truckstars as well. Oh man, sisters and brothers were holding it down. Big up to my Kenyan track athletes. Oh my goodness, if you're not watching the Olympics, it's popping off. Let us know where you're listening from. We'll big up your ends. We're coming to you from WRCT 88.3 FM in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This has been a difficult weekend. We had to lay rest a young man called Deshaun Smucker all the way up in Clarion, Pennsylvania. Deshaun, rest in peace. Young man, just about the age of 24. Gone too soon. Young man was loved by so many people. Deshaun Smucker, rest in peace. Up next, Humans. Big song this is.
Nation boss, yeah. Hey, trouble them in a trouble, you know.
Where humility is plenty, growth is a must.
Nation, when you see me, I'm so looking like my last, yeah. When I last, me just a looking at my thoughts, and pray some things what people do mean out the past. Knock like some perfect, everybody have them flaws. Long before the COVID thing, done enough for them, I wear a mask, yeah. Watch them kill you as them try go round the bus, yeah, yeah. Loyalty come with the cost, and I'm fiaxing over love in your heart. But anytime your heart too big, my lad, then we take your fear fool. This is why me not like humans. This is why me not like humans. No, no. I'm a can't do trust no girl when me remember what she do, man. This is why me not like humans. This is why me not like humans. No, no. Now the people them will style me as they please, yeah. Like them want me forget all the memories. Me forget but not forget, but kind of for them are some praise. The only thing my beg the father protect me from enemies, alright. Always put my kills on my base. Enough time me get lonely but company at the least. It's a different energy when me get higher by the trees. Tanisha says she feel it all the way across the seas. It's a natural mystic blowing through the air, yeah. Listen carefully now, you will hear. Say anytime your heart too big, my lad, then we take your fear fool. This is why me not like humans. This is why me not like humans. No, no. I'm a can't do trust no girl when me remember what she do, man. This is why me not like humans. This is why me not like humans. No, no. Anytime your heart too big, my lad, then we take your fear fool. This is why me not like humans. This is why me not like humans. No, no. I'm a can't do trust no girl when me remember what she do, man. This is why me not like humans. This is why me not like humans. No, no way.
You are listening to the Tembo Sounds, the culture show, where we play reggae music loud enough for you to enjoy it.
I just want to get to my bench and show the wheel. Who can't get still? Yeah. Don't feel the way. Old time something come back again. Go round the minutes and go tell your friend. When me check it out live.
Check it out, lad. No ain't no better than yard. But why, but why, but why, but why? When me check it out, lad. No ain't no better than relax, me no like, I'm in no like, I'm in no like. Me no like, I'm in no like, I'm in no like. Walk on, like I'm in no like, I'm in no like. Yes, me no like when you're going down to South Africa. This one's straight to prison.
WRCT, Pittsburgh. We're always here for you.
Welcome to the show, everybody. They're doing it. They've done it. They are actually voting for the government to shut down and for the United States to default on its debt and for the paychecks to start being withheld from so many government workers. I'm talking about Republicans, of course. This is not exactly winning. This is not exactly America first. And what we have to remember as we go through this story and go through the facts is that they want chaos. They are taking this sort of accelerationist, burn it down approach when it comes to Democrats currently having the White House and having the Senate and having the House. Let's take a look at what's going on. And of course, it's now Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell who is orchestrating all of it. Mitch McConnell, Senate Republican, has voted for the United States to default on its debt and for the government to shut down. They're doing it again, and we're gonna look at the history of this, and you will see that this is another one of those reckless political footballs, but this time, only one side is even playing the game. We often talk about debt and deficit. The football is thrown back and forth. Democrats and Republicans both play the game, although it's Republicans who don't actually care about debt and deficit. In this case, it's a football that Republicans are only tossing back and forth between themselves. Business Insider reporting. Senate Republicans, led by Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, blocked a measure on Monday evening that would have averted both a debt default and a government shutdown, bringing the U.S. another step closer to a financial debacle as Republicans escalate their efforts to derail President Joe Biden's domestic agenda. All 50 Republican senators voted against the House-approved legislation that funds the government through December 3rd and suspends the debt ceiling until the end of next year, heightening the brinksmanship over the federal government's ability to pay its bills that has roiled Congress for months. The measure also includes $28 billion in disaster aid funding for communities ravaged by a recent pair of hurricanes, along with aid to resettle Afghan refugees in the United States. The vote was 48-50. And the bill failed to clear the 60-vote threshold to end debate known as the filibuster. After the vote, Majority Leader Schumer assailed Senate Republicans, saying they, quote, voted to drive our country straight to a government shutdown and the first default in the country's history. Now, do we think the U.S. really is ultimately going to default on its debt? No. No. And that's why I actually think, oftentimes I think the adjectives and descriptions in articles are very wrong, but brinksmanship sort of is accurate here in this particular case. The article notes McConnell has insisted since June that Republicans will not sign on to a debt limit hike or an increase of how much the U.S. government can pay back its bills, even as he said earlier this month it was a necessary step because America must never default. Wait, if he said America must never default, why is he voting in that way now? What you have to understand and remember is that they want chaos. They basically want to at least make it seem as though they are willing to burn it down, although in the end, I don't believe they are actually willing to do that. They'll blame it on Democrats. They'll say, oh, Democrats failed to negotiate a bipartisan deal. This is often what they do. They pulled it with the Biden COVID package, even though with the Trump packages, it was like, yeah, okay, can basically do whatever you want. They are counting on, I guess, enough Republicans and independents getting upset and saying, wow, things went wrong. It must be the party in power to blame, right? And the sad part is, to a great degree, that's exactly how it might play out. Smart independents would realize this is Republicans sabotaging the economy, or at least coming close to sabotaging the economy, to hurt Democrats. It's extraordinarily reckless, and it's all to make Joe Biden look bad and to make other Democrats look bad. McConnell is not bluffing in the sense that he really wants it to appear as though the U.S. will default on its debt. Ultimately, I don't think they will do it, but they want to divert attention away from the damage done by Trump. They want to divert attention away from the fact that more and more evidence is coming out that there, you know, maybe premeditated is not an all-encompassing term, but that the January 6th riots at least connected to all sorts of different participants in the Republican Party who wanted to create as much chaos as possible when it came to the election of Joe Biden. And as I said at the top of the segment, this debt ceiling stuff is really all Republicans. Like, it's not really a political football insofar as it's one side that plays this game, much like with COVID stimulus. Let's talk COVID stimulus first. Trump does COVID stimulus one. Democrats have some comments. They have some slight disagreements. They're worried that the implementation of some of the programs will essentially be a slush fund, which they were right about because that's exactly the way it was. But they weren't saying, no, 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 we're not giving aid because a Republican is in the White House. Democrats did COVID package one, and then they did COVID package two. Republicans said this is the patriotic thing to do. This is the right thing to do. Some of them were a little concerned with the exact sticker price. Joe Biden takes over, says, well, it's time for the third COVID stimulus. We're not out of this thing. We need to do something. And Republicans all of a sudden say, oh, this is too expensive. And these provisions are giving money to undocumented immigrants. The provisions were no different than the provisions under Trump COVID package one and Trump COVID package two. And it was Republicans who did the 180 based on who was in power. Go back to October of 2015. In October of 2015, Senate Republicans under the leadership of Mitch McConnell, majority leader at the time, voted to suspend the debt ceiling for 2 years. They suspended the debt ceiling. September of 2017, Senate Republicans under the leadership of the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, voted to suspend the debt ceiling again. That got us to August of 2019. And Senate Republicans under the leadership of the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, voted to suspend the debt ceiling for 2 years. And now in September of 2021, now it's minority leader Mitch McConnell. Same situation. Minority leader Mitch McConnell is blocking the Democratic majority 50-50 with Kamala Harris as the tie-breaking vote, except when you need 60, right? But it is technically a Democratic majority. Now, all of a sudden, that very same Republican Party under the leadership of the exact same guy, Mitch McConnell, said, oh, no, 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 no. We can't suspend the debt ceiling. We're going to go forward with default and with a government shutdown. These people are pathetic. They really are. And when Democrats and Republicans are the same or basically the same, we talk about it. When they are dramatically different, we talk about it. And this is exactly one of those cases. Ultimately, the debt ceiling, I believe, will be raised. And the U.S. is not going to default on its debts eventually. But the damage that will be done getting to that and the embarrassment that will be suffered getting to that appears like it will be pretty significant. We talked yesterday. We had two relevant stories yesterday to what we're going to talk about now, which is firings related to people who are refusing to get vaccinated for their jobs as required by their employers. Yesterday, we had two stories sort of about this. One story asked, is it time to start firing unvaccinated employees en masse, so to speak? That was one question we talked about yesterday. Many of you wrote to me and said, yeah, it is. Once you say those are the rules, you've got to follow through. Otherwise, these are empty threats. It's like the parent who makes an empty threat to the kid, or I don't know, whatever analogy you want. The second question we asked yesterday in another segment, and many of you wrote in about this one as well, is, are some of the people saying they're going to quit over a vaccine mandate lying or exaggerating or maybe even misunderstanding their own willingness to quit? And they're not really going to quit. They're probably just going to go and get vaccinated. And one of the examples we had yesterday was Massachusetts state troopers, where the union for the state troopers said, we've gotten dozens and dozens, you know, massive dumps of resignation letters. The union said that. But state police human resources said, one trooper actually resigned. Now, we'll see how it all shakes out. We now have a couple of additional data points, and it seems as though there are people willing to quit, but more likely be fired over not getting vaccinated. But yesterday's assessment that it might only be half to 1%, half of 1 to 1% of employees at any given organization may well be right. Let's look at a couple of data points. Washington Post reporting, North Carolina hospital system fires about 175 workers in one of the largest ever mass terminations due to a vaccine mandate. Timothy Bella writes, a North Carolina-based hospital system announced Monday that roughly 175 unvaccinated employees were fired for failing to comply with the organization's mandatory COVID vaccination policy, the latest in a series of healthcare dismissals. We're going to get to that. Novant Health said last week that 375 unvaccinated workers across 15 hospitals and 800 clinics had been suspended for not getting immunized. They were given 5 days to comply. Novant Health spokeswoman Megan Rivers tweeted Monday that almost 200 of the suspended workers received their first dose by Friday. The hospital confirmed that the rest of the suspended employees who did not comply were fired, although the exact number of those dismissed was not specified. We stand by our decision to make the vaccine mandatory, as we have a responsibility to protect our patients, visitors, and team members, regardless of where they are in our health system. We couldn't be prouder of our team members who made the choice to receive the COVID-19 vaccine and remain part of the team. Later, the article says the mass termination of unvaccinated hospital system employees is among the largest of its kind to date. More than 150 healthcare workers who didn't comply with the mandate at Houston Methodist, which was one of the first to require the shots, were fired or resigned in June after a federal judge upheld the policy. And importantly, more than 99% of the system's 35,000 employees followed the program. We have a few other data points here as well. Becker's Hospital Review put out yesterday a sort of summary of departures at 18 different health systems. Now, departure could be firing or resignation. It could be either. And it includes St. Luke's University Health Network, 17,000 employees, about 150 total refused to get vaccinated and resigned. That is just under 1%. Newark, Delaware's ChristianaCare fired about 150, or the equivalent of under 90 full-timers for not complying. In New York City, New York Presbyterian's 48,000 team member system had fewer than 250 resignation/firings. That is about half of 1%, right along with our estimate from yesterday. New Hyde Park, New York's Northwell Health had about 24 leaders not allowed to continue. We don't know the total number there. So you can go and look at the exact numbers here. But what are we learning so far? First and foremost, it does seem that when there's a disproportionate amount of headlines about people resigning or people saying, fire me, sirs, that the real number of people willing to go, and whether it's a resignation or a firing, you know, it doesn't really make a difference. It seems that it's about half of 1% to 1%. That's number one. The second thing here is, you know, when it comes to healthcare systems, this is not just about the employer in a vacuum saying you got to be vaccinated and otherwise you're out with no real connection to reality. This clearly also has to do with patients. And what they should do is the nurses that don't want to get vaccinated, the administrators that don't want to impose vaccination, if there are any, the doctors that don't want to get vaccinated, they should start their own clinic. They should start their own hospital. If patients prefer to go and be seen at a place where the employees, nurses, and doctors might be vaccinated or might not, but it's not required, if that's more appealing to participants in the healthcare marketplace, because that's what it is in the United States, if people would rather go to the place where maybe the employees and service providers, health providers aren't vaccinated, then that would be a business. Open a clinic and say, hey, if you want freedom, come be seen here. Come to our ER We don't make the nurses get vaccinated. We don't make the doctors get vaccinated. If that's a popular idea in the marketplace of ideas, then do it and it will be very profitable. My prediction is most people who go to a healthcare setting want to go somewhere where they know the people providing care to them have been vaccinated. But this is a great opportunity to test it. What do you think would happen in that situation? Let me know. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. The David Pakman Show does depend on folks like you to support the program. We have a membership program at joinpakman.com. You get a commercial-free audio and video stream of the show every day. We do an extra members-only bonus show every single day for our members. And you can use the coupon code BETTER21 to sign up today. Tucker Carlson, the well-known Fox News propagandist, had a very sort of strange guest on last night. And during the segment, Tucker claimed that there are people being forced to get fake vaccination cards. And there are a few things about this that are ironic. See if you can guess what some of them are. I'm going to talk about them after we first look at the clip. Take a look.
At this point, if you haven't gotten the vaccine, which is free and readily available, there's a reason for it. You've thought this through and decided not to. You thought that was your right. But people are being forced to, some are being forced to get fake vaccine cards, which is understandable, I think, because they feel forced. They're trapped. What do they do?
So there's a few ironic things there. Were you able to spot them all? It's quite a few, and I'm going to go through them. So first of all, Tucker claims to be part of the party of personal responsibility. This is one of it's a principle. I was going to say a trope. This is one of the stated principles of the Republican Party, personal responsibility. But he's completely missing who is actually responsible for getting a vaccine card that is fake. It's the person who gets the fake card. That's who's actually responsible for that. It's not whoever, whatever employer says, hey, we've decided you've got to be vaccinated to work here. They are not responsible for you getting a fake vaccine card. You are responsible. Party of personal responsibility, supposedly, but blaming everybody but the person doing the actual illegal thing. Second, no one is even really being forced to be vaccinated, never mind get a fake vaccine card. And what I mean by that is, of course, there are organizations and companies that are now requiring employees to be vaccinated, period. Some of them are just saying, you've just got to be vaccinated, like the hospital systems we talked about earlier. There are some organizations that are saying, you've got to be vaccinated, or you have to test weekly, or you've got to test daily. But in all cases, you as a free individual in our magical country of America with the marketplace of this and the marketplace of that and the job market, you can decide as an individual, I can choose to meet the requirements of my employer and stay working here, or I can quit and or get fired and go find a different job. And of course, as an individual who defends the freedom of corporations to be unregulated and do what's best for them, you couldn't possibly oppose that, right? Those are your principles. No, but they oppose it all the time. But you get to decide. And then thirdly, and I'm guessing some of you knew that I would eventually get to this, Tucker works for a company with a vaccine passport system and a stricter vaccination policy than the one that Joe Biden announced a few weeks ago. And Tucker hasn't complained about it once on either of his programs, on his nighttime program, nor on his daytime program. And as a reminder, a few weeks ago, Joe Biden came out and said, we are putting in place a requirement for employers with at least 100 employees where the employees either must be vaccinated or they've got to test weekly. That was what Joe Biden put in place. Fox News has a far stricter policy. The Fox policy is, you've got to be vaccinated and submit proof of vaccination through our vaccine passport system. If you're not vaccinated, you have to test daily. Remember, Biden's program is weekly. Fox says, we're going beyond it. We're saying, if you're not vaccinated, you need a daily test. And you need to continue wearing masks in many settings where a vaccinated individual would not have to wear a mask. Okay? Tucker hasn't mentioned it once. Tucker hasn't said, hey, by the way, guys, you know, all these segments I'm doing about how terrible all of these requirements are, Fox's requirements, my employer has even stricter requirements and I denounce it. He hasn't said it once. Shocking, right? Given how principled Tucker Carlson is. Oh, no, of course not. Because it's all a grift to the degree that I would assume Tucker is vaccinated. And I would assume that, much like we'll get to later, based on what people have said, Tucker knows that this is a way to get good ratings by making people angry and afraid. So saying that someone is forced to get a fake vaccine card because they don't want a vaccination is like saying, I don't know, I was forced to rob a bank because my employer doesn't pay me enough money. Really? And sadly, this perverse logic is sometimes used to justify violent and horrible actions. We were driven to riot because they stole the election from Trump. We had to do it. Well, hold on a second. What happened to personal responsibility? We were driven to loot and to destroy property because they came out and protested for better policing, which we don't think we need. What? See how that goes? They were forced to be criminals. And yet they claim to believe in personal responsibility. Bottom line, remember, Tucker is giving his audience the pablum that they want and that is really profitable for him. Tucker is almost certainly vaccinated. He's almost certainly in favor of vaccines. He's not offended enough about vaccine requirements to even mention the fact that his employer has one of the strictest ones. And there's a very good article from the Washington Post called "Tucker Carlson Ties His Vaccine Fearmongering to a Core Republican Insecurity." Philip Bump wrote this, and he tried to explain this as follows. Quote, "He's enormously skilled, Tucker, at elevating fear among his viewers, at presenting them a sensible line of defense against an irrational and devious world. So he wraps the effort to vaccinate Americans into a broad sense that America is changing in ways that undercut its traditions. Imagine treating a vaccine as a god, which of course no one does. Fox News obviously sees value in amplifying Republican concerns about the vaccine. If it didn't, it's safe to assume that its programming, including Carlson's, would be redirected. Fox News employees who spoke with the Daily Beast described the network's focus on undercutting the vaccine, or at least government advocacy of it, as, quote, great for ratings and something that is unparalleled in getting, quote, our viewers more excited or engaged. They are admitting why they are doing this. Lastly, Philip Bump writes, fear and fury are great motivators. And if you can make vaccination seem like part of a government promoted effort to push Americans away from religion, all the better. This is the game that he's playing, and he's playing it quite well. Let's look at a very interesting segment from Fox News yesterday. This is a segment in which Jesse Waters, I believe, is the host of this program. This right winger who's very popular on social media, one of the top view getters on Facebook, Dan Bongino, is a guest or panelist. And the topic is crime in the United States. This is a favorite topic right now of the right to lie about and to deceive people about on right wing media. And Fox, I guess she's like a contributor. She's a guest on this program. Fox contributor Jessica Tarlov absolutely crushes Waters and Bongino. Jessica Tarlov may be a centrist. I don't know that much about her. I'm not calling her a hero. I'm not saying anything other than in this particular segment, she's really, really good at crushing the dishonest, delusional lies of two of these guys on Fox News. So let's look at the segment again. The framing here is the crime surge, which Republicans are attributing to Joe Biden, but they're using 2020 data to attribute it to Joe Biden. Now, you might be saying, hold on, David, Trump was president in 2020. How does that have to do with Joe Biden? And that is exactly the right question. So let's take a look at the segment.
And the spike in murders, again, was only in areas dominated by liberal politicians. So this is obviously not true. It's obviously has something to do with the politics, not COVID.
So the framing there is, we're going to talk about the fact that the crime is up in cities rather than the fact that the crime was up while Trump was president. But of course, we've talked before, cities tend to be run by Democrats. Quote, dangerous cities are run by Democrats and safe cities are run by Democrats, because in general, Democrats prefer cities and Republicans prefer non-cities. Okay, let's see how Jessica Tarlov deals with this.
I'm not sure that it has something to do necessarily with the politics. There are a few things that are important here. One, Jesse, we'll do another segment on that, but all those countries you read, they don't have a rampant gun problem like the United States of America does. Check how many weapons
people
per capita
they have.
People
can still kill you with a knife. Go down
but
to
they're
Brazil.
Not. They're not. And
go
I lived,
down to Colombia.
I lived in the UK a long time where people got knifed all the time, and it's still nothing close to our murder rate. So,
okay. This is they love this talking point, but it's very dumb. Knives create less death than guns in equivalent situations. Part of it is to kill someone with a knife. There's something much more sometimes viscerally repelling. I mean, the action, right, of stabbing someone to death. You've got to be, people aren't throwing knives from across the room. You've got to be right on someone. And the fact that with a gun, you can create more distance and still inflict damage to someone just makes it less likely that a mass stabbing would even be attempted in the same way that the mass shooting would be. But we have data about mass stabbings, and most people survive. One of the most deadly mass stabbings, we covered it at the time. It was in 2019 in Japan. Two people were tragically killed, two kids. 17 were injured and survived. Someone with a semi-automatic weapon in that situation, with the amount of time that this incident lasted, would almost certainly kill many, many more people. So good for Jessica Tarlov for pointing that out. Jesse Waters is going to say people can be killed by knives. Fine, it may not convince that many people on Fox News, but Jessica Tarlov is getting it right. Now let's get to the 2020 thing, which is just unbelievably dumb that they're doing.
The data that we're talking about is 2020. Those were the Trump years. So all of this blaming on President Biden that's happening now, actually under President Biden's watch, the murder rate has even gone down. Another important component of the FBI data that the short-term increases was in all regions, not just in those liberal cities. All regions. That means in places where conservatives are. That means that this can't all be because of bail reform, defund the police, yada, yada, yada. And also, the murder rate and the crime rate overall is lower than it was in the 1990s. So conservatives are running around screaming, we've never seen anything like this. You have seen something like this.
So these are all very good points, and they all should be dealt with individually. If the problem is that the danger and crime are happening in liberal cities, we need to adjust for the fact that liberals tend to live in cities and run cities, and conservatives tend to overall live in more rural and suburban areas. And in terms of per capita crime rates, we actually see that per capita, some of those rural areas are really, really dangerous. The problem is it's hard to compare a city to a tiny town. You really have to look at an area where you have enough of a population to actually evaluate this. And then, of course, number two, long-term, the crime rate has been going down. We did see a bump in 2020, but Trump was president, and much of it was despair related to the mishandled pandemic. They were blaming Biden back then, saying, well, it's the culture of people who would vote for Biden combined with people saying we should defund the police, even though it hadn't actually been done. It had just been proposed by some. But I thought the buck stopped with Trump or whoever was president. So this is a really great example of the narratives that they push not having anything to do with the facts, and a sensible person, in this case, Jessica Tarlov, just saying, hold on, let's put some facts in the way of the propaganda. How many Fox viewers were convinced by this? I have no idea. Maybe not many. But this is exactly the way that if you're going to participate, and Jessica Tarlov is a contributor to Fox, so clearly she is, if you're going to participate in these setup debates that are set up against you, this is exactly the way to do it. We'll have more on this on the David Pakman Show Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. You can also find me on Instagram at david.pakman. All right, I got a bunch of emails from folks over the last 24 hours about this new book coming out from the very short-lived White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham, who worked for Donald Trump for a little bit. She has written a new book, and some of the allegations in the book are just absolutely crazy. We're going to talk about them. Each is crazier than the last or the previous or whatever sort of a phraseology you want to use. Let's start with this first one about Donald Trump having what's being described as a surgical procedure. I'm going to talk about this in a second, and opting not to receive anesthesia. because if he had received anesthesia, he would have had to temporarily turn over presidential powers to the vice president, Mike Pence. This happened when George W. Bush had, I believe it was also a colonoscopy back during his presidency, and Dick Cheney was briefly temporarily given presidential power. So the story is Trump skipped anesthesia for a previously unreported procedure at Walter Reed to avoid giving Pence temporary power. The details are that Trump skipped anesthesia for a previously unreported colonoscopy in 2019, so he wouldn't have to temporarily relinquish presidential powers. This is according to a new book called I'll Take Your Questions Now. Stephanie Grisham wrote it, former White House press secretary and chief of staff to Melania Trump. She said in the book that this was for a regular colonoscopy. Now, let's talk about that a little bit. The initial story was, wow, Trump's pretty alpha. I mean, he's saying do the surgery without anesthesia. That is wild. Then it came out it's a colonoscopy. So you might be asking, is it accurate to say that it is surgery? Is a colonoscopy really surgery? It is classified as a minor surgical procedure. Sometimes they're just taking a look. Sometimes if there's a polyp or something, then they are cutting something out, and then it's, you know, more clearly a surgical procedure. It is generally done with anesthesia. Often it's like a deep sedation. You're not like out like I was for my famous appendectomy, but you are sedated. But it is one of the things that is done without anesthesia. And some say that it is safer without a general sedation. I'm not a medical expert. I don't know exactly that, but it's the patient's choice. And sometimes patients don't realize they have that choice. But it is not inaccurate to call it a surgery in the sense that that is how it is classified. So the article goes on to say, Trump puzzled reporters with a mysterious unscheduled November 2019 visit to Walter Reed. You might remember this is that infamous, why did he go to Walter Reed? And added to the confusion by saying it was part of his routine annual physical for 2020. Remember, he said, I was just hanging out and I thought I'd go and get a jump in 2019 on my 2020 physical. That was a lie. We believed it to be a lie at the time, and it was, and it was for a colonoscopy. But the big news is that he, according to Stephanie Grisham, opted not to receive the general anesthesia in order to maintain presidential power and not have to relinquish it to Vice President Mike Pence. Grisham wrote in the book, Trump could have used the procedure to spread awareness and educate Americans about the importance of colonoscopies. But as with COVID, he was too wrapped up in his own ego and his own delusions about invincibility. And he, quote, didn't want to be the butt of a joke. How immature do you have to be as a 70 plus year old man? So first of all, there's the desire to keep power. And maybe Trump was imagining if Pence were president and I was the VP, I would be using this opportunity to try to somehow seize the power of the presidency when the president is being sedated for a colonoscopy. So maybe Trump's idea of I don't want to give it up to Pence was rooted in if I were Pence, I'd be trying to seize power. We don't know, but that certainly tracks with Donald Trump. But then the other part of this is, you know, the idea that you're going to be laughed at because you got a colonoscopy in your 70s rather than, hey, you know what? This is a great opportunity to talk about the importance of routine screenings and colonoscopy being a part of that. But no, that's not the way that Trump functions. So it all tracks here. And for me, the bigger story is with the Stephanie Grisham book, and we're going to get in a moment to more of what she writes in the book. This is another person, Stephanie Grisham, who was in Trump's inner circle, had a front row seat to what was going on, who saw the reckless, dangerous, and petty behavior that Donald Trump was engaged in, did nothing, said nothing at the time, and later is speaking out about it now when there's an opportunity to make money from it, from writing a book. That should come as no surprise either, because Trump was surrounded by these people, but it is yet another despicable action by one of these folks. Let's now talk about the next story from Stephanie Grisham's new book. Okay, so one story from Stephanie Grisham's new book, I'll Take Your Questions Now. is Trump opted not to receive anesthesia, general anesthesia or deep sedation for his colonoscopy in 2019 because he didn't want to temporarily give presidential power to Mike Pence. Okay, that's story number one. The second story told by Stephanie Grisham, which we're going to look at now, is, I believe, far more disturbing because it again is more of a another data point in this smittenness. I don't know that that's a word, in Trump being smitten with authoritarians like Vladimir Putin. Stephanie Grisham writes in her new book that Donald Trump told Putin privately, "I'm going to have to act a little tougher to you in public for the cameras." Okay. Salon's John Skolnick wrote about this yesterday. Donald Trump reportedly assured Vladimir Putin that he had to act, quote, a little tougher next to the Russian president, quote, for the cameras, according to a forthcoming book by Trump's White House press secretary. The book, I'll Take Your Questions Now, by Stephanie Grisham, details a host of never before seen insights into Trump's relationship with Putin, brings to light a number of more bizarre personal requests, his terrifying temper, and strains in his relationship with the former First Lady, Melania Trump. According to the New York Times, the former president went out of his way to please Putin, telling the Russian leader during the 2019 Osaka summit, the G20, that he would put on a display of machismo, but just for show. Trump reportedly told Putin, "With all the talk of sanctions against Russia for interfering in the 2016 election and for various human rights abuses, I'm going to act a little tougher with you for a few minutes, but it's for the cameras. And after they leave, we'll talk. You understand." In another instance, Grisham also claims Trump joked with Putin about, quote, getting rid of journalists who produce, quote, fake news, telling him, "You don't have this problem in Russia." Wow. The Washington Post got a copy of the book. It details tensions between Trump and his wife, Melania, who, quote, unleashed her contempt for her husband amid reports that his attorney, Michael Cohen, paid adult film star Stormy Daniels to keep quiet about their affair. It was during this personal debacle that Melania reportedly grew much closer with Grisham, telling her that she didn't believe her husband's denials of the affair. Oh, please, are you kidding me? I don't believe any of that. This is the equivalent. So I don't care about the Melania stuff. Trump saying to Putin, "I'm going to have to pretend to be a little tougher with you for the cameras, but we're going to talk. Everything's fine." This is the equivalent of bombing Syria, quote, bombing Syria, but telling Putin ahead of time and bombing an empty runway, which was back up and running within hours. Now, I was not for the escalation of tensions with Syria. I don't mention that anecdote because I'm saying Trump should have really crushed Syria. That's not what I'm saying. It's an example of the subservience of Trump to Putin. It's not about they were in a room together plotting this or that. We never believed that that was the case. It's not about the, quote, collusion with Russia was going to be so proactive that it was going to remove Trump. That was never the case. Go to my clips at April 2017 where I'm telling you that. This is about the level of, again, Trump being smitten with people like Putin and just enamored and sucking up to them. The other funny little detail is that if this is true, if Trump did tell Putin, "I'm going to have to act tougher in front of the cameras, I'm going to have to, but don't worry, it's not going to be real." Trump didn't really act tough with Putin in front of the cameras. I think there was, like, you know, I asked him about the hacking and he said they didn't do it. That's acting tough. What are you even talking about? Like, if that was Trump acting tougher with the cameras on, imagine the level of suck up brown nosing that was taking place behind the scenes. And it's just become so clear in the time since Trump has left office that Putin and the Russians, you know, they are really good at this stuff. They really are. It's not me taking a position. It's just Putin and the Russians know a perfect mark when they see one. And Trump is just the perfect mark. This shouldn't be surprising to anybody. I saw a funny comment, which was, you know, we've had moron presidents before. We've had cowardly presidents before, but a moron coward in Trump's configuration was really a unique combination. You could say that as far as the Grisham book goes, she's a disgruntled, another disgruntled former person who you can't believe anything she says. Maybe. But that remains to be seen. And so far, everything that's been reported as being in her book from the advanced copies that the New York Times and the Washington Post got it all is very, very much on brand. We'll take a quick break. When the book is finally out, we'll have much more from it, I'm sure. So one of the 2022 races that we're following more and more closely is that of the Texas gubernatorial race. We believe that Beto O'Rourke is going to be entering as a Democratic challenger against the incumbent Republican Governor Greg Abbott. Greg Abbott has been an absolute disaster for the state of Texas. He has been disgusting along with his Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick since day one of the pandemic. The infamous grandma's willing to die for the economy incident, of course, as you might remember. Greg Abbott has been absolutely horrible on energy. Texas, of course, with this big boy libertarian independent energy grid, which has failed them in the winter and it's failed them in the summer, and it's just a disaster for Texas. And then now, of course, recently with Texas seeing COVID run rampant during the Delta spike, this has fortunately really hurt the approval ratings of Greg Abbott. And we have additional new data about this. More Texas voters now believe that Greg Abbott does not deserve re-election. And of course, they are completely correct. More Texas voters believe Greg Abbott does not deserve to be re-elected, according to a poll released yesterday, Tuesday. The survey was conducted by Quinnipiac University, finds that 51% of registered voters in Texas believe Abbott doesn't deserve re-election, compared with 42% who say he does deserve a third term. These are disastrous numbers for an incumbent Republican Texas governor, and I love it. The opposition to Abbott's re-election is up from June. A different Quinnipiac poll in June found 46% said re-elect and 48% said no. Now it's only 42% say re-elect, 51% say no. Basically like a four-point slide in the direction of bad, I should say, from the standpoint of negative. The most recent poll also found only 44% of Texans approve of the way Abbott is handling his job as governor, 47% now disapprove. This is the first time since Quinnipiac started polling Texas that Abbott's approval rating is below disapproval, referred to as being underwater. This is absolutely fantastic. Now, most Republicans still support Abbott. 83% of Republicans approve, only 12% disapprove. As far as independents go, 43% approve, only 6% of Democrats approve in Texas. Now, just as an example, okay, of how absolutely horrible this guy is, this was over the weekend on Fox News, Chris Wallace really grilling Greg Abbott over his claim that, listen, we don't have to worry about the abortion law, the dystopian abortion law that we passed, restricting the ability of women who have been raped from obtaining abortions. We don't have to worry about that because we're going to eliminate rapists, ban the virus, right? I mean, just make murder illegal, solve the problem. Okay, let's listen.
Is it reasonable to say to somebody who is the victim of rape and might not understand that they are pregnant, you know, until 6 weeks, well, don't worry about it because we're going to eliminate rape as a problem in the state of Texas?
It doesn't make sense, no, but let's see what he says.
Well, there's multiple things I have to say in answer to this, but the first thing, obviously, is that survivors of sexual assault, they deserve support, care, and compassion.
Now, it's funny how he says, obviously. Much of the Republican Party doesn't make it obvious, actually.
And Texas is stepping up to make sure that we provide that by signing a law and creating in the governor's office a sexual assault survivors task force. But separately from that, Chris, I got to point out about the ways that I have fought to to arrest and apprehend and try to eliminate rape. I sought the death penalty.
Governor, excuse me, because we are running out of time. There were more than 15,000 rapes in 2019 when you were governor.
Yeah, apparently just, you know, ending rape by threatening people with really strict punishments. You know, he wanted the death penalty for rapists. We really continue to lack evidence that the death penalty is really a deterrent. We've studied that for a very, very long time. But, you know, we're going to eliminate rape is kind of like ban coronavirus and just be done with it. It doesn't make any sense. And then, of course, meanwhile, The latest is Texas has this disaster with COVID. Texas has this disaster with energy. And what is Abbott doing? Abbott is launching voter fraud audits from the 2020 election, bowing to Trump's pressure. Vanity Fair reporting. Greg Abbott is suddenly bending over backward to find 2020 election fraud. Abbott's office says it has been reviewing votes in certain Texas counties for months, but others say the mad dash only started after Donald Trump demanded an audit. Greg Abbott is going to be pushing for auditing multiple county, auditing, recounting, who even knows what these things mean at this point in time, four counties in Texas. Trump won Texas. There is no point. We talked about this on the bonus show yesterday. There is no point to do this whatsoever. Texas is so poorly served. Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, remember the Cancun cruise fiasco. It would bring me no greater pleasure than to see Greg Abbott just absolutely crushed in 2022. And Beto O'Rourke could be the guy to do it. I don't know. I mean, coming off of a loss is never, doesn't put you in a particularly strong position. Last week, one of our live callers asked, is Beto really the right guy to face off against Abbott, given that he lost his last race? I don't know the answer to that. But we have time. Listen, Matthew McConaughey, depending on your preference, Beto O'Rourke, whatever pronunciations you have for these folks. They would all be better than Greg Abbott for sure. And we're going to follow this race very, very closely. So we had a call, maybe it was last week, maybe the week before, where a viewer asked me, what do I think happened to the whole Matt Gaetz thing? The investigation, charges were expected, forthcoming, et cetera. And I said, I don't know, that these things can take a while. I said at the time, I don't know if Matt Gaetz is going to be charged. It's not looking good, but I don't know if Matt Gaetz is going to be charged. The latest news is that Matt Gaetz has hired a bevy of sex crime lawyers to defend him. And it makes sense that if you expect charges of murder, you would hire lawyers who are experts in defending you against murder charges. That sort of is logical. That makes sense. And he's entitled to get lawyers. But this is a sign of maybe the direction that things are going. Bess Levin writing for Vanity Fair. That the last time we checked in on the legal comings and goings of Matt Gaetz, things were not looking great for him. Since the news broke this spring that he was under investigation for paying women for sex and separately for sleeping with a minor and transporting her across state lines, the hits have included Gaetz's former wingman pleading guilty and having charges dropped from 33 to 6 in exchange for cooperation. That didn't look great for Gaetz. The news that Gaetz had allegedly paid the women he compensated through online payment platforms, leaving a digital paper trail, not good. The news that the feds are additionally looking into obstruction of justice charges. His former wingman reportedly giving the feds years of Venmo transactions and thousands of photos and videos. And Gaetz being heckled on the street by strangers shouting, "People think you're a pedophile." Gaetz has denied allegations, but the latest news in terms of his lawyers suggests that this could be real trouble. Gaetz has hired a major team of lawyers. The team, according to reporter Roger Sullenberger, includes attorney Mark Mukasey, who has defended the Trump Organization in a number of legal battles, Isabel Kirshner, a top criminal defense lawyer who represented Robert Haddon, the ex-Columbia University gynecologist accused, listen to this, by 200 patients of sexual assault, ultimately pleaded guilty with regard to two patients, lost his medical license, didn't get time in prison. So it seems that Isabel Kirshner is the right person to hire. Meanwhile, Gaetz's campaign has retained the services of New York trial lawyer Mark Furnish, who has the distinction of having defended some of history's most notorious criminals, including Jeffrey Epstein, the Mexican drug lord Joaquin Guzman, a.k.a. El Chapo, and Keith Raniere, who was sentenced to 120 years in prison for running the NXIVM sex cult, where women were branded, like physically branded, and forced into sexual slavery. All of this suggests Gaetz is taking the possibility of winding up in legal trouble very, very seriously. Spokesperson for Gates declined to declined a request for comment. So there's a lot going on here, all right? In the context of, are there ever going to be charges? This signals we should be keeping an eye on this because there could be charges very, very soon, and they could be very serious charges. Now, here's my view on the lawyer thing. If you ever need to defend yourself for any crime you're accused of, whether you're guilty or innocent, doesn't matter whether you're guilty or innocent. If you're accused of a crime, you should hire a lawyer that specializes in defending people against that type of crime. Any sensible person would do that given reasonable means. So Matt Gaetz can hire whoever he wants. This is a signal of what may be coming, and that's it. If I were being criminally tried, I would want a criminal lawyer. If the criminal charges were murder, I would want someone experienced in defending murder. There's no question about it. The fact that he's hiring these people signals that there are some really serious charges potentially coming related to sex crimes. Doesn't mean he's guilty. He gets his day in court. Every time we talk about possible charges, people write to me and they say, David, do you not support due process? Do you not support innocent until proven guilty? First of all, sort of like, do I support gravity? It's like we have due process and people are innocent until proven guilty. He gets his day in court. Everybody's entitled to that. But this signals that the charges may well be coming. However, he really shouldn't be allowed to use campaign funds for these lawyers because these are personal charges. Now, there are people making the argument that part of this is retaining counsel for his campaign so that if there are charges, the campaign for reelection can continue unfettered. It feels pretty weak to me. The charges are for personal actions, and he should not be allowed to use campaign funds for his defense. I feel very strongly about that. There's already been reportedly $25,000 for a lawyer been paid by the Gaetz campaign, even though the charges stem from Gaetz' alleged personal actions. That's not good. That shouldn't be allowed. But let's buckle up, because this really could get very interesting very, very quickly. We have a voicemail number. If you want to call in, that number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Call anytime. During the Trump rally on Saturday, we talked about this group, Blacks for Trump. They wear shirts that say Blacks for Trump. They are black, the individuals mostly. And we've talked about how it is a common thing at Trump rallies that the few black attendees are placed very conspicuously on stage behind Trump. Here's a caller who tried to figure out who are Blacks for Trump. And he didn't come up with much. Take a listen.
Hi, Mr. Pacman. My name is Alfredo Gomez-Bellows, and I was watching your show, and I just had a question for you. Like, you showed this video of Trump just recently at a rally. This is today's 9/27/2021.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of people that had Blacks for Trump T-shirts that are in white with black letters. And they're black people. And I was just wondering if you could give us a take on that. Why is that happening? I looked up blacksfortrumps.com. Nothing. I looked up Blacks for Trumps. Really, I don't see anything. So I was just wondering if maybe you could enlighten us on some of that. I love watching your show. I'm a member. And thank you so much for putting the word out there, the reality. Thank you.
So listen, I've been treading a little bit carefully about the Blacks for Trump thing, because if you do a search for Blacks for Trump, you will find a lot of articles about one of the individuals involved with Blacks for Trump. But there's very little about this supposed group. And I don't want to, you know, it feels wrong to me and disqualifying to just basically say, if there are black people at a Trump rally, clearly it's AstroTurf or they've been paid. I don't have evidence of that. The fact that there's so little about Blacks for Trump as a standalone group with anything other than just appearing at rallies and part of their sort of repertoire makes me wonder very much about the sort of veracity that this is a real group. Every time we do a rally and Blacks for Trump people are up behind Trump, I get emails from people saying, look, David, the Trump campaign, the Trump team is known for hiring people to go to rallies. Here's a Craigslist post of when they advertise. I get it. I'm not ready to say the group is totally made up. There are Black Trump supporters. Black Trump supporters exist. I'm not going to just say, you know, it seems problematic to just write off a group, a minority group, a historically oppressed group, and say what they purport to be their political views aren't real and clearly it's made up. I'm not going to do that. But there are real questions about what exactly Blacks for Trump is and sort of what to what extent it exists as an organization. I encourage you to look it up. Maybe at some point we'll get some kind of more definitive answer. We have a great bonus show for you today. How do you get the bonus show? I wish I knew. No, I do know. You sign up at joinpacman.com. Today on the bonus show, we will talk about the anti-vax push in the NBA. Actually seems to be working to push the league around a little bit. We'll talk about LeBron James saying, I did what was right for my family, and that was get vaccinated. We'll talk about other players saying no. We will talk about mail delivery about to get permanently slower and more expensive. Why? You could probably guess. And lastly, following up on our Monday story, a judge has ruled that New York City can go forward with its vaccine mandate for educators and staff in the New York City school system. All of those stories and more will be on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
Soon, pay toilets will take over the world, and everyone, everywhere will listen to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Hey, this is Tom from the band Loose, and you are listening to 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is Dean from Luna. You're listening to 88.3 FM WRCT in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, this is Kimani Mali, and you're listening to WRCT FM. Keep it locked, Rasta.
From New York, Rock Raider.
Yeah, yeah, 1-2, Total Eclipse.
From Executioners, and we chilling on WRCT.
Word up, Pittsburgh representing 88.3 FM.
Check it out, all
right? Peace.
Now, it's E. Dueto from the Love Dogs, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
O-U-R-C-T, Radio 900.
Hi, you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, home of... Oh, crap. We're not really home of anything, are we, Andrew?
W-R-C-T, W-R-C-T,
Soul is next.
We don't actually have the legal documentation to back that up.
Hey, this is Marlon Saunders, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
This is Danny Glover, and you're listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh.
Sure.
All right. Yeah.
Are we still taping?
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
We're live. We're not taping.
Oh, we're live.
No,
okay.
We're taping.
We're taping. Okay. They want me to do a little promo. And what do I do? I say WRCT. Is that it?
WRCT Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Hello and speedy delivery. This is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I'm in Pittsburgh. I always listen to WRCT right here in Pittsburgh. Speedy delivery to you.
Hey, this is Ben Foles, and you're listening to WRCT. It's 2 for Tuesday, 3 for Thursday, Ladies Night Wet T-Shirt Contest on 88.3 FM, biatch.
Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hey, this is Jim from Rusted Root, and you're listening to WRCT 88.3 in Pittsburgh. Yow.
Hello, I'm Meg Lee Chin, and when I'm in town, I like to listen to WRCT 88.3 FM.
RCT Pittsburgh. Automation is the key. I am Dr. Jazz, PhD.
RCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Hello, this is Adam Clayton here, the bass player from U2. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Yeah, yeah, what's up? This is Total Eclipse.
Word up, Rock Raider from Executioners.
Word up,
chilling,
chilling on
WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah, right, 88.3.
Check it out, all right?
Word up, real hip hop.
Yeah, thanks, man.
You don't even have to do the hip hop show.
Oh, we do everything.
Okay. Listening to WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation. Please stay tuned for more incredible tracks from our extensive, vast, libidinous and
balls.
Awesome. I called it libidinous. It doesn't make any... I mean...
Senator John McCain, and I'm from Arizona. But when I'm in Pittsburgh, I always listen to WRCT, one of the finest stations in all of radio. And Carnegie Mellon University is one of the finest academic institutions in our country. Be sure at your next election to vote early and vote often.
WRCT is the best place to be. He sends the music out your way 40 hours every day.
Yo, there's only 6 degrees of separation and we know 5 people you know. How much longer did you really think you could avoid strict flow? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Like this!
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It's about understanding the reason we have to do it is because we haven't done it before and invested properly. We put $21 trillion into war since 9/11. And now some want to block a compromise plan of just over $3 trillion over 10 years. No. No. The cost is too high.
As Democrats try to avoid a government shutdown, they may fall short of a deal on President Biden's $3.5 trillion social safety net and climate bill. We'll look at their priorities with Reverend William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. Then, about 4 women are killed by their partners every day in the United States. The coverage of the death of a young white woman, Gabby Petito, has gotten an enormous amount of media coverage. But where is the coverage of the missing black women, of the missing Native American women?
The mainstream media does not care when black and brown women go missing. If we learned anything over the past few weeks, it's if we want these stories to be heard, we can't rely on the mainstream media to amplify these stories. We have to amplify them ourselves.
We'll have a roundtable discussion with Amara Kofer, host of the podcast Black Girl Gone, reporter Melissa Jeltson, who covers violence against women, and Native American attorney Mary Catherine Nagel. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Lawmakers in both the House and the Senate will vote today on a short-term spending bill that would fund the government into early December in a last-minute bid to avert a disastrous government shutdown before a midnight deadline. The vote comes as Democratic leaders struggle to pass 2 major pieces of legislation, a $1 trillion infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better Act, a $3.5 trillion 10-year package that would expand the social safety net and combat climate change. On Wednesday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer huddled with President Biden in the Oval Office as fractures within the Democratic Party threatened to derail Biden's legislative agenda. Meanwhile, House Democrats have narrowly approved a bill to suspend the ceiling on the national debt until the end of 2022. The Treasury Department warns that without congressional action, the U.S. will begin defaulting on its debts in mid-October. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Wednesday the consequences would be catastrophic.
The nonpartisan Moody's analytics found that these consequences could include a loss of 6 million jobs, the elimination of potentially $15 trillion in household wealth, sending the unemployment rate surging to 9%, and a decline in the real GDP of our country by 4%.
After headlines, we'll speak with the Reverend Dr. William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. The United States reported nearly 2,500 COVID-19 deaths Wednesday, even as hospitalizations and new cases edged down from a peak in early September. Alaska is the hardest hit state, with some of the highest